You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning. I'm Daryl West. I'm Vice President of Governance Studies and Director of the Center for Technology Innovation here at the Brookings Institution. I'd like to welcome you to our forum on policy solutions to improve U.S. special education. And we especially appreciate each of you braving the weather and coming out this morning. I walked in at 7 o'clock. And the sidewalks and some of the roads still were quite treacherous, so we appreciate your dedication in showing us and helping us think more about this important topic. The 2004 Individuals with Disabilities Education Act has changed education priorities for special needs students. It has been credited with improving outcomes for students, but criticized for generating bureaucracy and rules and regulations that some believe stand in the way of providing more effective services. So this morning we're going to talk about what existing policies serve students well and what policies are in need of change. Should Congress combine IDEA with the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act? How should we think about questions of special education access, inclusion, and cost, especially in an era of large government deficits? Today, we have assembled an outstanding set of distinguished leaders to discuss these and other questions. We are pleased to welcome Alexa Posney. She is the Assistant Secretary for Special Education and Rehabilitative Services at the U.S. Department of Education. In this position, she plays a pivotal role in policy and management issues affecting special education. She works to improve education at the state and local levels and oversees the distribution of financial assistance to local education agencies. Prior to that position, she served as Commissioner of Education for the state of Kansas. Doug Fuchs is the Nicholas Hobbs Chair in Special Education and Human Development at the Peabody College of Vanderbilt University. He co-directs the Kennedy Center Reading Clinic. He has been principal investigator on 35 federally sponsored research grants. His research focuses on pre-referral interventions, peer-assisted learning strategies, curriculum-based measurement, and methods of integrating students with disabilities into mainstream settings. He is the author or co-author of more than 200 articles in scientific journals and has won Best Paper Awards for several of these publications. He also is a past editor of the Journal of Special Education. Lon Jacobs is general counsel at the News Corporation. He joined the News Corporation in 1996 as senior vice president and deputy group general counsel. He is the parent of a 14-year-old daughter with Down syndrome and has written in the Wall Street Journal about a parent's perspective on disability. Marilyn Friend is a professor of education at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and the author of a book entitled Special Education, Contemporary Perspectives for School Professionals, which is now in its third edition. She is the president-elect of the Council for Exceptional Children. She has made a number of presentations in the United States, Canada, Europe, and Asia. She focuses on collaboration, inclusive school practices, interpersonal communications, and team building. She also has written more than 45 articles on various topics related to education. So we're going to start with Alexa. She will provide her ideas on special education, and then we will hear short presentations from Doug, Lon, and Marilyn. Alexa, thank you.
Well, good morning, and thank you very much for inviting me to join today's forum. I'm really eager to contribute to this conversation, but I'm also looking forward to hearing from my colleagues as well, especially as we face not only the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, otherwise known as ESEA, but also with the reauthorization of IDEA. And I want to focus my comments briefly on the noun and verb versions of progress. President Kennedy once said, "Our progress as a nation can be no swifter than our progress in education. The human mind is our fundamental resource." IDEA, as many of you know, celebrated its 35th anniversary in November. That event prompted me to reflect on the great improvements in outcomes of students with disabilities over the last 35 years and the ways in which IDEA programs and requirements supported those improvements. For example, prior to the passage of PL 94-142 in 1975, 1.75 million children with disabilities were denied access to even an appropriate education. And today, more than 6.6 million students with disabilities are learning alongside their peers. 95% of these 6.6 million kids attend a neighborhood school, and almost 60% of them spend at least 80% of their day within a general education classroom. The National Assessment of Educational Progress data has shown increased proficiency in reading among fourth grade students with disabilities, with scores increasing by 23 points between 2000 and 2009. And this is in comparison to scores for students without disabilities, which increased only 7 points over that same period. In 2009, 60% of students with disabilities graduated with a regular high school diploma, a 17% increase since 1996. The national graduation rate for all students is 68%. Nearly half of students with disabilities who graduate from high school enroll in a post-secondary program. The bottom line, IDEA has resulted in improvements as we come to learn more about how to best educate students with disabilities. What else has changed? We invested in Part C programs so that we could identify infants and toddlers who needed help long before they started school. NCLB included students with disabilities in the country's accountability system. We allot 1% of IDEA's annual expenditures to Part D programs dedicated to research, innovation, effective practices, technical assistance. Yet, we also must recognize that we still have a long way to go to realize the law's promise. Graduation and post-secondary enrollment rates are still far too low. Employment rates of adults with disabilities has actually decreased between 1990 and 2005. We know that we're headed down the right path, but how can we shape it so it gets us closer to our goal of educating students with disabilities to the highest standards? President Obama has said, "If you're walking down the right path and you're willing to keep walking, eventually you'll make progress." So now what? I pose that question within the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services and externally to constituent groups. Early responses indicate that at more than 12% of the overall student population, students with disabilities are truly a part of, not separate from, the diversity of American public schools. As such, the upcoming reauthorization of ESEA must continue to account for the needs of students with disabilities, and IDEA programs should provide the extra supports to help students with disabilities achieve challenging standards. So now what? I'm advocating for greater alignment between ESEA and IDEA. Alignment will force us to consider how we can break down parallel systems, such as highly effective teachers, to align our definitions, to use one data collection system, to begin the debate on eligibility versus needs, to focus on outcomes versus process, to emphasize prevention and intervention versus identification, and concentrate on results rather than enforcement. We want to make sure that ESEA and IDEA programs and other department initiatives are coordinated. For example, our Teach.gov initiative, which attracts new talent to teaching, especially in high-need areas like special education, and our Part D programs that train special education teachers and related services personnel, need to work together. We need increased coordination between school-level programs, early intervention and supports, universal design for learning, response to intervention. These are also musts and should be within ESEA. Early feedback shows tremendous support for principles of universal design in instructional and assessment materials and support for positive school-wide multi-tiered systems of supports for all students. Alignment does not mean the merger of IDEA and ESEA, nor does it represent any intention whatsoever to diminish or weaken IDEA as a unique, freestanding, and important civil rights statute. The reauthorizations of ESEA and IDEA will create an opportunity for a paradigm shift that will allow us to define one educational system while also refining our policies and practices to make certain that we educate all students to the highest possible standards. Together, these statutes will work to fulfill the promise of high achievement for all students and will help us to progress towards the President's goal that by 2020, America once again will lead the world in college completion, and the Secretary's goal that all students graduate from high school prepared for college and a career, regardless of gender, class, race, or ability status. Henry Ford once said, "Coming together is a beginning, keeping together is progress." working together is success. I hope that we can all work together to reauthorize ESEA and IDEA, making common sense changes that lead to the success of all American students, especially those with disabilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alexa. Our next speaker is Doug Fuchs of Vanderbilt University.
Thank you, Darrell. I, too, am very pleased to be here, have an opportunity to speak. Alexa, I very much enjoyed your talk. I thought it was wonderful, and I agree with much of it. As you'll see, I have a slightly different take on at least one aspect of it. And I didn't know what Alexa was going to say, so... In its promotional materials for this event, Brookings says in part that, quote, IDEA has been credited with gradually improving outcomes for students, unquote. Brookings isn't alone in asserting that outcomes are improving for students with disabilities. Government agencies, professional organizations, private foundations, advocacy groups, and academics make this claim as well. Yet, if we define outcomes in terms of academic performance or academic achievement, then I want to suggest to you that there are no persuasive data to back such a belief. What basis do I have for saying this in 5 minutes? Let me turn to three well-known databases, the National Longitudinal Transition Study, or NLTS, the state's annual performance reports, or report cards, and the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or the NAEP. Let's first talk about the NLTS, National Longitudinal Transition Study. Mary Wagner and her associates at SRI compared the nationally representative high school students with LD from the 1980s to same-age students with LD in 2001-2002. Wagner and colleagues found a greater percentage of the nationally representative 2001-2002 cohort taking more challenging academic courses and taking them more frequently in integrated or mainstream educational settings. Further, whereas only 2% of the high schoolers in the mid-1980s earned, quote-unquote, mostly A's, and only 56% graduated, 19% in 2001-2002 had mostly A's, and 74% graduated. However, the researchers also found that in 2001-2002, only 11% of the national sample of students with LD was at or above grade level in reading. 23% were between 1 and 2.9 grade levels behind. 45% were 3 to 4.9 grade levels behind, and 21% were 5 or more grade levels behind. 21% of the national sample, 5 or more grade levels behind. The students' math achievement, according to Wagner et al., was equally abysmal. What did the state's performance and proficiency data say about students with disabilities' academic performance? According to an analysis by Candace Cordiella for the National Center for Learning Disabilities, there is little improvement to report. Among schools failing to achieve AYP because of the academic performance of one subgroup, it's the students with disabilities subgroup that's most frequently identified. Keep in mind that only 30% of schools are required to make AYP for students with disabilities because of issues connected to group size. Among the databases, only the NAEP may be seen as encouraging since it has reported improvements for students with disabilities in reading and math. But there are two important caveats to keep in mind here. First, students with 504 plans are included in the NAEP sample. Second, exclusion rates for students with disabilities selected for the sample are very high, 28% nationally and as high as 60% for some states. The NAEP has gone on record as saying that the students with disabilities performance data cannot be generalized to students with disabilities nationwide. Across these databases, there is no clear, strong message that the academic performance of students with disabilities is improving as a function of IDEA, NCLB, or whatever. The data generally indicate that most students with disabilities are continuing to perform poorly, and I believe people familiar with these databases would agree with this interpretation. Two last points. There are, of course, other ways to define outcomes for students with disabilities besides academic performance, and some of these are very important, such as accessing mainstream settings and curricula. Finally, some blame the Office of Special Ed Programs for students with disabilities' generally poor academic performance. They say that OSEP spends too much effort on compliance requirements rather than insisting on standards for academic performance. I believe the cause of students with disabilities' unacceptable academic performance is deeper and more pervasive. Special education has lost its way in this country. It has lost its capacity to provide intensive and expert instruction to our most academically vulnerable children and youth. There needs to be national recognition of this fact and a collective rethinking of special education and the role of special educators in our nation's schools. Until these things happen, there will be no important academic improvement for students with disabilities. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. Our next speaker is Lon Jacobs of the News Corporation.
Thank you. I'm also delighted to be here, and I think I come out somewhere between these two. Not quite as pessimistic as you. What I thought I would focus on, one of the questions we were asked was what policies at the IDEA are in need of change or at least revisiting. And I want to focus on the concept of least restricted environment, where the general goal of IDEA is to integrate special ed students into neighborhood schools and mainstream classrooms. I think this is a laudable goal, but I think that it's often unworkable. I'd like to digress just a little bit for a moment. I think we can all agree that the biggest problem that we have in special ed education is the attitudes of so many people in mainstream America. Our children are often considered not quite human, that they're not deserving of the attention that they're giving. They're not, that the money is better spent on other students. And it's these attitudes that have to change before we'll ever fix the special education system. So how do you do that? Obviously, the notion of a least restricted environment, the notion of inclusion, introducing these special kids to the mainstream is important. They need to see, you need to humanize these children. You need to make them realize that we're all part of the human civilization. And one of the schools that I work with, I think, has come up with a terrific approach. It's in the elementary school level. And what they focus on is not just inclusion of special needs kids, but also inclusion with respect to diversity. And so what you have in these classes is you have one